Right, welcome back to another episode of Beardos Media. We are discussing today leadership to leadership. So, Mr. Ali, how are you?
Alhamdulillah, we're good.
Are you going towards leadership or leadership? Which one are you leaning towards?
Which one am I leaning towards? Do you know what? I have an issue with leadership because it's sheep, isn't it? But it's everything.
I thought you like sheep. We just come through Qurbani, man.
No, I'm more of a goat kind of person.
Okay. Yeah. I heard you're going Wales as well soon, very soon, yeah.
What's the connection? Oh, wait, I don't want to know. Never mind. but no. Leadership. What's leadership?
Look, here's the discussion point. Because my thinking is this. Whether we like to believe it or not, whether we like to understand it or comprehend it, or, you know, maybe we already think we're leaders, or maybe we don't even want to be considered as leaders. The problem is, sooner or later, if we live long enough, we are going to be perceived as tomorrow's leaders in some way, shape, or form. Okay. Now, whether that's within your families and you're one of the elders, if you think back or even now, how you perceive the elders or what you think about the elders or how you observe the elders as you're growing up. Yeah. We always think about them to be our role models. So they're our leaders. Yeah. Whether we think about it in the community sense, whether you walk into a shop and whilst you're walking into a shop and you're having a discussion, or maybe you're just doing some shopping around in the shop, shopping around. Sorry, I'm just getting trigger happy with that function. You're going to observe other people as children even.
Yeah.
And take from them or learn from them what is the best way or how we are supposed to be behaving as adults. Yeah. So children will be observing people around them. You know, Jim Rohn once said, you know, you are the average of the five people you hang about with. Yeah. So you are a product of your company. What we see around us, what we observe around us, eventually becomes a part of us in some way, shape, or form. So whether that's in the family, whether that's in the working environment, whether that's in the community, what we see around us, we pick up, we learn. And unless we go out to break those barriers by thinking outside the box, it becomes the kind of the norm, doesn't it? Your environment, you know, has an effect on your way of thinking, your way of looking at life, and your way of understanding life. So the problem here is, whether you believe you're a leader or not, whether you don't think you even want to be a leader, someone looking at you who perceives you to be some kind of a role model will follow you, which makes you a leader just because of age. Simply because of age, not because of any status, not because of any kind of achievements. Just because of age, you could become a leader even if you don't want to.
See, that's probably true predominantly in a family sort of setting, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because obviously when it comes to, you know, careers or anything else, not necessarily the case, but we're pretty much specifically talking about families, yeah, and households. Mm. Or even, you know, extended families, or in some cases villages, communities even. Because I picked up on this, and I don't know if it was like subconscious or not, but you've mentioned a couple of times that it's a problem, or the problem is, or
yeah,
you see what
yeah.
I mean?
Yeah, the problem is we don't give it enough thought. We don't give enough thought to our own actions and how those actions affect others. So as I mentioned, you may not want to be even perceived as a leader. You may have no interest in being seen as a leader or be perceived as a leader.
Okay.
This is in itself, you know, if you don't understand that your actions or omissions may have an effect on the way people perceive or learn from you, or, you know, see life, then that in itself is a problem. So let's just take me as an example. In theory, if I said, look, I don't want to be perceived as a leader, I'm living my life, I want to stay at home, I want to do my thing, I go to the shop, buy my groceries, go to work, 9 to 5, clock in, clock out. You know, I'm living my life and I'm happy with that. I don't want to be perceived as a leader. Yeah. the moment I walk into a shop or the moment I walk, I'm anywhere in the public and there are people who are younger than me, whether they be teenagers, whether they be young kids, automatically there's a sense of learning which everybody of their age is going through. And when they see the way I behave, but if it's little kids, kids are always picking up things, right? Now, if they see me behaving really badly by my standards, for them, they may think that's fine, you know, or that's what you do when you get to that age. That's what people do when they get older. They're allowed to be brash. They're allowed to be loud. They're allowed to be, you know, arrogant or physical, or, you know, all those kind of things. Okay. Do you see where I'm coming from?
Let's start from before you get to the shop. In fact, before you even leave for the shop. So
yeah,
you're at home now. Yeah.
Yeah.
Wife, kids. Do you think it should be a discussion had as to who's the leader, or it just is?
I think within a family makeup, different people will naturally take leadership roles in different circumstances. Okay. Depending on their personalities, some inherent skills or, you know, strengths some people will have. So in one particular household, the wife may be better than the husband in doing certain things, in which case she's the leader in that. And the husband may be better at other things and maybe the leader in those particular things, which he has his strengths in. I don't think it's something you always have to discuss, but if it works, discuss it.
See, is that that's not leadership, though, is it? Let's say, for example, you obviously each have.
What do you say leadership is then?
Well, this is what we're going to try and hopefully figure out. But you're at home, obviously, you and your wife, and now, I don't know. Let's say your wife is better at DIY or cooking or, you know, whatever it is. Does that then saying that she's then the leader of fixing the bathroom?
She takes the lead role in fixing the bathroom. Yeah, nothing wrong with that.
Is that leadership? Is that still leadership, or is that saying okay?
That's neither leadership or non leadership. There's nothing to do with leadership. That's just somebody who's better at something who's doing.
Yeah, that's doing, what I'm saying. So it's not
taking that role.
Majid is man of the house. Yeah. For example, we know.
Yeah.
Whether it is or isn't, I don't know.
Yeah. I'll give you that one.
Okay. So Majid's man of the house, leader.
Yeah.
You've got the wife, you've got the kids. Now you recognize that your wife is better at, I don't know, fixing the tap or doing whatever. Now you delegate that task to her. Yeah?
Why would I delegate that task to her? We can go deeper. We say, why would I need to delegate that task to her if she's better than me at fixing the house? Are you saying then that's the role of the leader is to do the delegating, right? And say, right, oi, woman, go and fix the bathroom. Is that what you're saying?
I don't think you have to say, oi, or woman. You could try it. I'd love to see it.
Have you seen my latest post on Facebook?
No.
You've got to watch it after this. Yeah, you've got to watch it after this.
Okay. Look, I think you've got to have a leader in every aspect, in every field, right? Now, what you're saying is a lot of it can be done without it being said. It's just kind of already implied, automatic, or known, which, yeah, I agree with that. I think that's fairly straightforward.
In that example, yes. In the example you gave, yes, I would say it's some things you don't need to delegate or elect, so to speak, a leader for a specific task. That's task-based competency in my eyes. If you're more competent in certain things than somebody else, you know, the natural way of moving is to get that person or ask that person to do it, and that's it. When you're thinking, I think you're talking about having leadership defined roles, then that's something different. If you talk about leaders, let's just say from a nationalistic point of view, you need a leader. Are you saying you need a leader for a country and you need a leader for a community? You need a leader for organizations. Then we're talking, you know, different things. The point I was making from the beginning was that it's inevitable. We're all leaders or going to fall into the role of leadership at some point in our lives if we live long enough. That's the point I'm making. So whether you like it or not, whether you want to adopt a leadership role in your life in any capacity or not, it's inevitable that one day, if you live long enough, even if you don't want to take on that role consciously, there are things happening around you which will put you into a leadership role. This is why I gave the example of somebody who's an elder walking into the shop, or somebody, an elder, the way they communicate, the way they behave, the youngsters look at that from a young, early age, and they will perceive these people as their leaders because they're older, they're supposed to be wiser, they're more experienced. And for them, that what they've learned is, when you're older, this is the status quo, or this is the norm, this is how elders behave. And for them, that's how they end up behaving. Yeah. So imagine we take the household example again. If within the household, everybody smokes weed, drinks alcohol, knocks themselves out, no one's got a job. I'm just talking extremes here. Yeah.
And knocks themselves out. How would you even?
Yeah. Okay, so you know what I mean, right? So yeah. if within the household this is what happens, then what they see around them is going to affect them, and that's totally fine with them. For them, that kind of an environment is the norm. So the people within that family, what they have led for the others in the family to understand is that this is the norm. Do you see where I'm coming from? That's their leadership skill there. Yeah, not skill, but that's their leadership there. It may not be good leadership, but it's leadership nevertheless.
Okay. Do you think in recent times, and I'm talking probably quite recent, there's a lot of people who are sort of finding themselves, as a bit of a role model or as someone that kids or younger people are observing, and they really, really don't want to be observed. And they don't see themselves any different to, these teenagers or these young adults. Obviously, I've not really been around, maybe not as long as you or some other people, but I don't remember it being that bad.
What, people not wanting to be observed?
People, yeah, not wanting to actually be seen as examples or not, not aware of their age or their sort of, their sort of role in the community. You've got people in their 30s and 40s, like I don't want to specifically pick anybody out, but if you see like a 40-year-old, wearing a certain type of tracksuit and with a cap backwards and, maybe like a sovereign or a gold chain or something. Am I being too specific here?
But no, it's interesting. Carry on.
A certain type of trainers and all the collars popped up, and you think, bro,
act your age, eh?
What are you doing?
But what's that got to, Okay, there is a trend, isn't it, amongst the elitists that they can do whatever. Have you seen some of the stuff that they wear? The elitists, people at the top of the food chain, like, people who have celebrities, they wear some really funky stuff and it starts trending, some weird stuff. The question is, I think these things always evolve anyway, trend. I think that you can just put that down to trend. You can get a 40, 50-year-old person dressing the same as a 20-year-old person, and there's no issue. I think, I think as long as it's decent, if that's what they want to wear in terms of what's trending, good on them, good luck to them, and that's their choice. I don't see that as an issue.
It is an issue because that's
what's the issue with a 40-year-old man wearing a cap backwards?
No, maybe not specifically just the cap, but you're getting an insight of this person's mindset. So they want to dress and they want to walk the streets and they want to act and behave and talk and maybe
bad man,
sort of lingo.
Kind of language, yeah.
Yeah.
Roadman. Is that why they call it roadman?
Do you know what it is? When you see an 18, 20-year-old like that, you don't really take as much notice of it because you kind of understand that they're going to grow out of this,
But when they don't grow out of it, that's what you've got an issue with. So if you've seen a man who's in his mid-40s driving around or walking around with, big chains and cap backwards, gold tooth, and, you know.
There's probably a lot of examples that we could give, but that, in my mind, that's one of the images that sticks. You know, playing the music loud, driving in a certain manner. You know, you just think, bro, you know.
Bro,
do I say bro?
Fix yourself up, bro.
No, or you're in your mid-40s,
yeah,
and you're calling a 14-year-old bro or bruv or my G or G.
I get that from, you know what? This is one of the other things that I want to talk about, because naturally, as you grow older, more and more people start to refer or address you as uncle or auntie. In your case, it might be either. You might be happy. But, you know, and then you think to yourself, wow, more people are now calling me uncle rather than bro. Now, something's changed here. You know, I've noticed that a lot since I've started to grow my beard, especially. But as we grow older, that's going to happen anyway. And then eventually it's going to be, you know, granddad or grandpa. Do you know what I mean? You're right. That does happen. When you see, and I've seen, and I've been addressed as a bro by people who are twice my age as well. And, you know, it works both ways. You know, it's the people, you know, when you see young lads with big beards, you know, and, you know, proper macho and they're like 6'5" and, you know, no, I'm not talking about you.
Nothing, 6'5" is not even a thing, is it really? Come on.
My nephews, right? And they're like that. They're like 6'5" and, you know, they've got beards and, you know, big guys. And one of them's got kids, and his kid is the same age as my eldest. And, you know, his voice is broken and he's taller than me, and he walks around and he says, "Salaam alaikum, Baba." Like that. Okay, so you get that, right? So this is that. The next generation down now, right? Someone says my 11-year-old talks about roadmen, forget 18, 19. So, yeah, you're right. And these are the kind of things that happen. So when you do see that, but Ali, here's the thing. That's what I'm talking about. To some degree, when we look at people around us who are in their 40s or 50s and they're still behaving like 15-year-olds or 16-year-olds, then there's an issue here somewhere. Mm. Because you will, without doubt, be seen as a role model for the younger generation, whether you want to be seen as a role model or not. For them, you're showing them this is also the norm. Yeah, that's what I was talking about. You know, the question then arises, Ali, what are our duties as we grow into the next phases of our lives, into our 40s? You know, how do we, if anything, how do we change, if we were to change anything about the way we live our lives or how we behave in the general community? Once we reach our late 30s, early 40s, we're in a different phase of our lives. Mm. So those people around us are going to see us differently. Question is, what if anything, 40s? Say that again?
What's changing in your 40s?
Life begins at 40, dude. Come on. So we're being born into a new life. You guys are catching up right now, yeah? Okay. And Nazira says it's called a midlife crisis.
Sounds about right, yeah.
Yeah, sounds about right. But yeah, so what does change, if anything, when we age and get to that age where we're no longer amongst the in inverted commas, younger crowd? Mm. What changes? What should change in your mind?
See, I think that's part of the problem is, you know, in my mind, when you're getting to that sort of an age, and then you're sort of expected to change or thinking of change, it's such a random time. 35, 40 wouldn't have been how it was maybe a few decades ago, you know.
Like okay, so what's changed then? What have you seen that's changed?
I think what I've seen, or what I've sort of been able to observe, is that we've really slowed down development.
In what kind of development?
In growing up, in maturing, in working our way towards being a leader, even being led. Okay, look, we speak about leadership here, but there's no leadership without people being led, right? So, you know, like a 12-year-old now is not the same as a 12-year-old maybe 10, 20, 30 years ago. When were you 12? Was it few years ago now.
Fifteen years ago.
Really slowed down, and I don't see the benefit of it. I don't see the benefit of what we do nowadays. And yaar chhodna bachcha hai, you know. And you've got 20-year-old. Oh, it's a bachcha, it's a puri, you know, puri umar baby. What umar?
You're thinking of specific examples. Give us those examples.
No, I'm thinking general. I'm thinking across all cultures, because it's not just in our culture. I think if anything, in our culture, we held on to it for a bit longer.
When you say our culture,
yeah,
like South Asian culture, yeah?
South Asian culture, yeah. Okay. I think we were probably still maturing and picking up roles and responsibilities at an earlier age in compared to, you know, maybe the British or the Caucasians or the Europeans. We seem to be losing that now. And that's where I see subsequent.
So the question then, okay, so what I'm gathering from what you've just said is there's a lack of maturity being developed within the next generation. Is that what you're saying? Yeah.
Yeah.
The question is, what's contributing to the lack of that, you know, maturity, and how do you see that being fixed?
Good question.
Honestly, I'm full of them.
You are, yeah. If we could get a couple of answers, we'd have a half-decent podcast here. But no, honestly, I don't see the fix. I think at the moment, the momentum is still slow down, slow down, slow down. Enjoy life, live your life, enjoy your life. Up to the point where you're just really not enjoying your life at all. You know, look, leaders used to be strong, and the people that would be behind the leaders, you can do we call them followers? Do we call them family? Do we call them whatever? They used to be just as strong. Yeah.
Who do you class in contemporary times as a good leader?
Difficult to say, man. Are we talking
anything? Leadership in anything.
Who's a good, strong leader in today's
time? Those of you who are listening to this, whether you want to put it in the comments or comments, give us examples of who you think is a good leader. Who would you perceive as a good leader, and what are your reasons for that? What do you see as good leadership quality? Look, my personal opinion is, in order for someone to become a good leader, they need to lead themselves first. You have to lead yourself. If you can lead yourself in every discipline in life, that's according to your own values, your own purpose, your own passions, you know, your way of living life, only then can you develop that into becoming leaders for others. Because if you can't even lead yourself, you're going to be hard-pressed to convince others to follow you. Again, the conversation is going round in circles, but my original question was, you know, in terms of our leadership, it's inevitable we are going to be perceived as leaders, but we've come to an angle in this conversation now, and I think it's worthy of exploring in terms of who do you perceive as good leaders in the community. Now, Salma's mentioned Bazi Jabbar, and I have to agree with her in terms of when it comes to charitable work, working within the community, for the community. Bazi has been an amazing guy based in Derby, Derby Crisis Response. I've worked along with him, and I know him. He's a great, great guy, selfless in that respect, and just gets on with things. What I'd ask you, Salma, is, aside from what Bazi does in terms of his khidma, his serving towards his community, what characteristics of his would you place in favor of saying that these are the reasons why he's a good leader? We know why he serves, that he does serve. He's a great server of the community. Mm. How would you say he's a good leader without dissecting too much of Buzz's personality? Nazira mentions Jacinda Ardern. That's a prime minister of what is it? New Zealand? I think so.
We're going to go with New Zealand. Yeah.
Cool. Okay, but why? Just Nazira, why?
You speak about you know, serving the community and being a leader in serving the community. I would say all leaders are our servants to the people that they lead.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah? You know?
Yeah.
And a sign
all
of
good leaders.
Yeah. Yeah. And a sign of, you know, a good leader in the making is someone who's good at being led. You know, if you're not true to your leader, say you're in the family, say you're in the household.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you're that, you know, you're like a, you, obviously you've got your father in the household and, you know, you're following his example and he's leading you and you're actually walking behind him. You listen to this man, you respect this man, you know, you honor his rules and you're fully behind his leadership. I think you're halfway there to making a good leader. Now, whether you've, how much you've picked up on his qualities and his leadership style and, you know, his authority and how he does it is the other half. Because knowing how to follow is knowing how to be led, isn't it? It's not necessarily good leadership, but because you've observed it and because you've respected it, and that's what's missing nowadays, is people don't like to be led. People don't like to follow rules. People don't like to show respect. People don't like to be told or disciplined.
Ali, that's like what came first, the chicken or the egg, really. Is that because that's just them, or is it because they weren't led in properly in the first place? They weren't taught to lead.
I think, and I try not to think too often.
Yeah.
Good idea. I think our parents, had they had better people waiting in the wings or following them or under their wings, they would have led us to a much, much better place. I believe that they were well equipped to do the job.
Explain that to me. I don't quite understand what you said there.
Okay. Where did it go wrong? I don't think the leadership went wrong first. I think the people following the leaders, us as maybe a generation, being disobedient to our parents and our teachers and, you know, whoever else we saw, was kind of where the problem started.
Again, I would say that's a chicken and the egg thing again, because you could keep going around in circles. Is it because they themselves are inherently bad? Is what it sounds like, what's being claimed here, or influenced? Or the question could be, well, where did they learn the bad habits from, and why were they not parented or taught properly to avoid coming to that situation in the first place?
Yeah, again, good questions. But then we're in a very multicultural society, isn't it? I think we had a number of influences on us. And it wasn't necessarily from, you know, our parents not leading us right or teaching us right. It just went wrong, didn't it? It just went fully Pete Tong. And it is sometimes hard to put a finger on it.
Yeah, it is. So the question then is, look, if it's inevitable that everyone's going to be taking the leadership role in some capacity or another, whether it's within the household, whether it's within the community, you know, how do you determine what your duties are as a leader?
I mean, let's look at one thing that we as a generation observed, for most of us anyway. We observed hardworking parents.
Yeah.
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 You know, whether it was in the home, whether it was going out to make a living or put food on the table, I think most of us observed good, solid work ethic.
Mm.
We barely picked up on that.
Mm.
In it.
Okay.
So if in that generation, I would say it was 95% plus.
Manual labor.
Manual labor, but being able to run a household. It doesn't matter how, you know, well off or what kind of job or career you were in. The crux of it is that you were able to go out and bring in the bread.
Hmm.
And you would do whatever it kind of took.
To do that.
To do that.
Yeah.
Now, us, waiting in the wings or watching this, you know, unfold, we were nowhere near 1995% as a generation.
Yeah, but how is that the fault of the new generation that didn't get to see that? Because their parents
are
now... That's
an observation. I think that's yeah. what's happened. I don't know
yeah.
why it's happened.
Well, it's happened because we have more amenity. We have more facilities. We have our lives are made a lot more simpler. You buy something off Amazon, not that I'm promoting Amazon here. Well, you can pay us if you want to.
Prime. But
you can buy something off Amazon on Prime in the morning, and by the afternoon, you've got it in your hands. Everything's quickly processed. And unfortunately, you see a lot of these issues with the, you know, grit and having the motivation to see things through. It's not the same as it used to be. And I give this example sometimes to people that I remember even myself going to the library to get books because I needed to do some research. Yeah. In winter months, walking, plowing through the snow, falling on my ass a good few times, getting, you know, bruises and getting there. You know, we didn't have much money, so we didn't even get into teas or coffees or hot drinks at the time. Mm. We'd not find, sometimes we wouldn't find the book there, so we'd have to reserve it. Mm. And then we'd have to go back after we've reserved that book to get the book, to do the research, and then use that book either there or bring it home. So we'd have to give the book back after we've done our research. And then that's how we'd, you know, research for our exam. And I remember doing, when I do my law degree, looking through case law, going through, you know, the legal papers, the everything had to be researched manually. Now everything is online, but it wasn't online there. I think there are a lot of benefits for making life easier for people. But with that, there have come some caveats. And one of those being that, you know, the younger generation won't probably have seen those struggles, which is not no fault of their own. So they won't comprehend the kind of grasping required to plow through life in general. Yeah. So, you know, when we think about leadership versus or coming to leadership, this is one of the things, because a lot of people just, they just end up being like sheep, don't they? They just follow.
How are we differentiating the two then?
Well, leadership.
I like the term leadership. I do think it applies to a lot of people, but.
Yeah, so that's exactly what it is. You know, leadership is obviously you are steering the ship. You are taking the bull by its horn. You are creating opportunities. You are serving the community. You are working outside the box. You are, you know, you are doing things independent of, you know, what everybody else is doing at times. Leadership being people who just follow the crowd. It might be 20-year-olds, like the example you mentioned earlier, 40, 50-year-old man just chilling out with 15, 16-year-old kids and 20-year-old kids. And, you know, he's just not moved on. You just do what everybody else is doing and you don't give a toss about what's happening in the world.
It's
a less responsible mindset, leadership, than someone who's in leadership. Somebody who has that leadership mindset would inherently have a more responsible mindset. They feel that they have a responsibility towards, you know, making a difference within the community, making sure that maybe, you know, doing some charitable work that people don't go hungry, don't sleep, you know, on the streets or get warm clothes or finding, you know, maybe job opportunities. You know, all these things fall into the leadership category. But the leadership, they just go with the flow, you know, follow the crowd and not bothered about what else is happening. That's the differentiation.
Do you think in homes, in families, it's as clear who the leader is?
It depends on the family.
Okay.
Depends on the dynamics.
It didn't used to.
I don't know. Maybe it did, and maybe you and I didn't get to see it, but it did.
Mm. And it was just sort of unheard of or unknown.
Maybe. You just don't know, isn't it? You know, it's one of those things you just don't know. We can speculate, we can assume. We're only going by our experiences of the families that we visited. But at that age, how much did we really understand about the dynamics about the household and who was running the household and who was the real leader within the household? I have to admit, you know, there's this misconception that, you know, it's always got to be the man who leads the house. Yeah. You have incompetent men sometimes who, through mere cultural pressures or expectations, try to lead the household but fail miserably. And I've seen some very, mashallah, amazing, strong women who have led their house and their husbands into better futures and situations because they possess the natural leadership skill. So it's not gender related. I'm just saying whoever's better in leading the house would naturally end up leading anyway.
Mm.
And as Salma says, kids rule, apparently. It's them who lead the house. So yeah, I agree with
that. Do you think there's a bit of a, I don't know, if I refer to the powers that be, do you think there's some kind of vested interest in children not being parented, maybe as much as we were or previous generations were? What would the kind of goal or logic be behind that?
I don't know if it is.
You don't think
so? I can't say either way. I would need to know why you think that. Why do you think that anyway?
I think that because there just seems to be more and more being taken away from the parents in terms of, you know, what they can and cannot do, how they can and cannot discipline, what they can and cannot. Like, for example, you know, there's certain things which, if we did in our time, it would just be us being silly, you know. Once when you were sort of 7 years old.
Yeah, it wasn't that long ago.
I'm sure you'd remember it like it was yesterday.
Just like yesterday.
But I don't know. I think there's something there. There's something there.
Okay, you're treading in different grounds there now. I think you're taking the conversation in a different angle.
It would have become a bit of a different topic, but I think there's a lot of dismantling going on in our society, in probably most societies.
In the family setup, the family nucleus, you think there's an agenda?
I think so.
These things are working out. Yeah. You could be right. You could be right. I won't rule it out. I wouldn't rule it out from the rulers. Had to get that in. I should have a counter of all these. Okay. That being said, the question for you now, Ali, is what do you expect from a leader within the community, let's just say? Forget the household. We'll focus on the household. Let's just look at the community. When you look at leadership within the community, what are your expectations of leaders within the community?
See, the leader of the community absolutely has to serve the community and be at their service. The only reason that, you know, he'd maybe be put in that place is because he'd be best sort of suited in order to guide and shape where the interests of that community lie and how to serve them. And I think that is the true essence of any leader. Do you see what I mean? So people in their mind, you know, when we associate, you know,
come on, man.
But look, it's really not that. It sounds so glorified, yeah? Being in charge, being the boss, being the leader, being the captain.
Yeah.
It's really not. It's a tough role if you do it properly and when done properly.
But yeah.
The thing is, you've got so many critics out there saying, oh, why him, why her, why this, why that?
There will always be critics, though. I don't think there will ever be a time when we don't have critics of leaders. Yeah. But that's not necessarily a bad thing.
I think that's also needed. I think that's also needed. But we need to get away from the role being glorified in that way. You see what I mean? I think that's why you have
It's a heavy responsibility.
It is.
I have been asked by several kind of organizations to be a part of their executive bodies or, you know, be trustees within certain organizations. And on every occasion, other than a couple of times, I've declined because I understand what responsibilities are needed for that particular role. And it's not just a title. There's a responsibility with it. Yeah, there's so many people who want these roles just to kind of put it on their CV or on social media, you know, as part of their bio and stuff. But they're not willing to do the work for it. This is sad.
Mm. And I think that's the problem, is that, look, if you don't keep it real as to what a leader does and what his goals are, then you are going to have a bunch of people just discrediting, disrespecting the leader, maybe wanting to be the leader, you know, and all of these people just popping up for no reason, even though they've got none of the skill set.
Good point Ambreen is making is breaking away from leadership in the context of parents and teachers is not necessarily a bad thing. Otherwise, how else are we to live an authentic life and become leaders, firstly for ourselves and then others dependent on us? Great point,
that's,
Doc.
That's a ridiculous point.
That's a fantastic point. Because she's countered you. So you know what?
Okay.
Which one is it? Wrong one. It's this one. Well done, Ambreen. I'm with you.
Okay, let's just break it down. Yeah, breaking away from leadership in the context of parents, teachers, etc., is not necessarily a bad thing. In what circumstances?
Of course, this is going to be dependent on the circumstances, isn't it? Right. So this, I'm sure Ambreen's not claiming that we should all become what's the word? Anarchists. To break away from every kind of leadership.
I don't know.
But I think the point being made here is...
I think there's quite... there's a serious agenda at play.
So are you not saying that you don't break or at least break away from some forms of leadership at all, ever? You always follow the leadership? You don't. I know you don't. So don't give me that. Don't even dare. Don't you dare.
Parents and teachers are our leaders. Yeah.
Okay.
There should not be, unless there's a specific kind of, you know, there's some kind of abuse or malpractice or something else going on. Why are we looking to break away from that? What is the need? Like, you know, we spoke about it a couple of weeks about.
I'll tell you why.
Being
I'll tell you why.
To yourself.
Okay. I'll tell you why. I'll tell you why. Only recently we were talking about how. You use this angle of having an agenda, right? Maybe the state has an agenda, or maybe, you know, certain departments have an agenda. You mentioned that about the schools as well. We had this discussion in one of our podcasts on how children are being maybe indoctrinated, in inverted commas, to follow a certain path. Mm. Now, you're saying the teachers are our leaders. Why break away from them? You're doing it yourself. That's why you break away from them.
What in what sense? What do you mean?
Well, let's just look at our value system. As Muslims, for example, or Jews, or Christians, Orthodox Christians, you know, the religions who do not favor the bisexual lifestyle, for example, yeah? If our teachers or the school teachers are teaching that to be a matter of fact thing and, you know, there's no other way, without taking into consideration the sensitivities surrounding personal beliefs and religion, then are you still going to follow that teacher?
That's the thing. So, okay, that's what I wanted to bring out, is that if you've ended up in a place where you shouldn't be, yeah, if you're, I don't know, I guess you can include parents in that. I mean, not all parents get it right.
Exactly.
So, but is that... You've got to be very careful in the way that message is portrayed, because honestly, these young people really don't need more encouragement to kind of rebel.
Like I said, everything is in context. Yeah. Everything has to be seen in context. But to make a flat umbrella statement to say that our parents and our teachers are the leaders, why break away from that? That in itself is problematic from the other side. You get it?
Very rarely so. I think predominantly speaking, our teachers and our parents are on the money. I've got it down. Occasionally, if it happens, it'll be very obvious.
I know. I'm not sure it would be.
You don't think so?
I'm not sure. No, I don't think it is. I think there are some finer nuances that people often miss And for that reason, they're indoctrinated to live a lifestyle of a certain way. And, you know, people don't know any other way. And, you know, that causes issues in the future as well. It's not always obvious. You know, you're probably thinking of extreme examples where it can be obvious, but there are some less extreme examples where parents can be, it could be a damaging parenting method, which is not so obvious. And, you know, it has a long-term effect. And well, if we talk about mental health, for example, as opposed to physical abuse, mental abuse, sometimes it goes undetected for many a decade before people realize, hang on, you know what? That's what I pointed down to. That's exactly when it happened. Sometimes that's more dangerous than the physical issues at play. Do you see where I'm coming from?
It's an odd one, because in order to maybe filter out or fish out that 1%, or maybe even less than 1%.
I don't know. How can you even put statistics to it? How can you say it's just 1% or less than 1%? It may be more.
Really? You think it's that bad?
Yeah, I think it is.
Wow.
I think you and I have different life experiences.
Yeah, no doubt. We're going to have. Yeah. Of course we're going to have. I think we overcompensate in telling people, break away, do what you want, live your own life, express yourself. I think it's all gone a bit.
Pear-shaped.
Butters, yeah. Pear-shaped. We'll go with pear.
Okay.
In order to, whenever you're trying to get through to those people who are, you know, being not handled correctly or led correctly, it's got to be done tactfully. I think it's got to be done more sort of directly. You don't just say to everybody, be free.
No, but you're thinking, you're looking at it from this angle. Those who are being led have gone astray. They're not following the leaders. Yeah. What about the opposite, the flip side of the coin? Those who were in leadership positions, have they fulfilled their leadership roles competently, adequately, for them, those who were being led to have developed that that mindset of how to be led with the right ethics or etiquette, you know? So, for example, whether we use that family, the family situation again, if the parents aren't educating their children properly, and all they're doing is screaming and shouting, number one, that demonstrate they're losing control. Number two, you know, it's not a healthy environment just to always scream and shout at your kids, right? It shows that, you know, you really run out of ideas and how to manage the situation here. Now, if the children realize that all I'm going to do is going to get screamed out or shouted out, that's it, then you're encouraging that kind of behavior to be repeated. But if you have other strategies in place, maybe they need to go on, the parents need to be on some kind of parenting courses or, you know, some kind of workshops or read up on how to tackle different situations, then, you know, no doubt they will be better equipped to teach the kids on how to be led, how to follow and who to follow. The question I always have is for kids is, don't look at who is telling you, have a look at what they're telling you. Now, if your value system is grounded and if your thinking has been quite broad in terms of your academic, your understanding of the world view in general is quite rich, then you're not always going to look at who is telling them. The child won't always look at who is telling them what they're telling them. They'll look at what is being told to them. So whether it's your teacher, whether it's your parent, if you understand and you've got a firm grounding on the differences between, you know, great, you know, rights and wrongs and stuff like that, then the other things won't make a difference. It's not going to make any difference whether it's your uncle telling you something, whether it's your auntie, whether it's your mom or your dad, your grandparents, your teacher. It doesn't matter, you know, if you have a good understanding, which a lot of kids have inherently, you know, as part of their fitra, the understanding of, you know, between right and wrong in most cases, the Mote mote sabich. And then if they are being told something which doesn't feel compatible with that, they will understand it. You know, that actually there's questions around this. But if you drill them that it doesn't matter whether it's right or wrong, if somebody tells you something, it's always right, then that is where we're going wrong as well. As, you know, leaders, potential leaders, people watching, potential parents, uncles, aunties, you know, if you're always telling your, the younger generation that somebody who's older, they're always right, that in itself is wrong, in my opinion. Maybe some kids need to, up to a certain age, understand that, you know what, your parents know best. Yeah. But only to a limit. I wouldn't encourage that for the rest of their lives. That's unhealthy.
Not for their lives, but
I would actually encourage independent thinking from a very, very early age. I would encourage kids, even if it's, you know, whether it's my nieces, nephews, kids, you know, whatever, to question me on what I'm propagating or saying. Mm-hmm. I would even say that.
Okay. What if they don't agree with you? What if they just don't see it?
Well, then they need to learn the etiquettes of disagreement. Then I'll advise them to watch our podcast on etiquettes of disagreement. It's well simple.
Played. Well played. Yeah, we've got the answers. We've got all the answers here.
Well, that's what I would do anyway.
Let's fast forward now, yeah? Let's say we've got all these people who, not anarchists, but, you know, broke away from the norm and the way things were and broke away from all their kind of parents and teachers and elders and their kind of role models or their leaders. And now they find themselves in the position of leadership. Yeah? Wanted, yeah. Unwanted, advertently, yeah. Or inadvertently.
Yeah.
What kind of world do we have?
Well, you'll get, again, within that situation, you'll get some people who will take up the challenge, depending on their own experiences. You know, how do I deal with this? If I'm going to be perceived as a leader, inevitably, whether I choose to or not, because of maybe my role in the community or society or my business or whatever it might be, or simply my age, just because of my age being senior to a lot of people, maybe I'm being perceived as a leader now in some ways.
Let's say you're a parent. So, you know, as a father, is it, do you think to some point it's optional to parent your children? Obviously, you'll...
What does it mean to parent children?
To parent would be to lead, wouldn't it?
No.
So you want to, you know how you spoke earlier about do your thing, live your life, whatever. You provide from them and everything else is done. But you're not necessarily looking for that leadership role. You just want to live your life and, you know, do your bit.
Yeah. Well, this is the dilemma. What I'm saying is, to a certain degree, everybody has to be held accountable for their actions. Yeah. If I have a neighbor of an elderly age, right? And let's just say I've got my nieces, my nephews, got loads of kids in the house, and this elderly neighbor is effing and blinding all the time, yeah? I would feel that it's appropriate to approach this person and explain to them, look, this is not a good example setting for the next generation. You know, be conscious of this. What would be disheartening is if somebody actually did that without thinking about it anyway. They actually did that. They started effing and blinding or saw every two words. You know, some people just have a habit, you know, call it the industrial language. Yeah. Some people are used to it. But it becomes incumbent on us as a community to help each other. And if that person is or understands or has at least a half decent value system or ethics, they will understand, okay, you know what, the guy's got a point. The kids are listening to me swearing. Maybe he doesn't want them to be exposed to someone swearing. Although I might disagree, let's just go with it. You know, this is where you have to show some tolerance.
Last 20 years, 30 years even, do you think we've sort of progressed or regressed in terms of how much we understand and how well equipped we are to sort of lead?
Depends on what you're leading, again.
Okay, let's say we're leading our young.
Yeah.
Do you think, generally speaking, do you look around?
I think with the way everything is evolving around us, then our parenting skills would have to evolve. If we have kids when they're growing up, grandkids when they're growing up, that's going to be completely different. We're going to have to evolve with what's going around us. We can't just cocoon ourselves and pretend the outside world doesn't exist and just always deploy the old school methods of giving it. That's not always going to work.
No, but do you think we've got better at it, or do you think, which way do you sort of see it having gone?
I think it's going to be a constant challenge, and because there's so many changes in the last 30 years, I think people are still trying to figure it out. What is the best way of parenting kids? Introduction of technology has had its benefits, but it's also had its drawbacks. It's had its challenges. And you've also got the communication methods, the way people actually communicate with each other. Some kids actually prefer to text others rather than have a proper face-to-face conversation.
Would you encourage that?
Depends on the situation.
Would you discourage it?
Wherever it can be helped, yeah.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. Okay. I think it's natural human behavior, communicating, socializing. And then, you know, you become a recluse if you're just relying on technology all the time, whether that be, you know, gaming, or whether that be texting rather than phone calls. I have a habit. I'm always leaving voice notes. And that's my halfway ground between texting and actually calling at times. So, you know, voice notes happen to be more convenient because whenever the person's available, they can pick it up. And then at least they get to listen to, you know, those notes and, you know, the emphasis on certain words or whatever it is. It's a bit more the magic. Oh, yeah. Oh, I've got a, which one is it? Yeah. Thank you. The magic.
Honestly, I think leadership is really something to be understood. I think it does need to be. I think it needs to be brought down.
You know what? I was actually hoping for this conversation to be somewhat different to the normal, you know, the leadership development programs I've been on, or, you know, leadership training that I've attended. You know, I didn't want to make it that traditional. What is leadership and how do you know? I wanted this to be, and I'm glad it was. It was a raw conversation. As you know, we never make notes or kind of orchestrate these conversations. These are all conversations which they just flow, and I'm glad we did it this way, because a lot of people talk about leadership, and a lot of people talk about leadership through an academic lens, and they view leadership through an academic lens. I've not seen many people actually talk about leadership when it comes to your own inevitable leadership role within your life, even whether you don't want to be recognized as a leader. It's inevitable. You get to a certain age, if you survive as long to the uncle or auntie age, which I am obviously at, then, you know, you're going to be seen as a leader, whether you like it or not. The question is, what are you going to do about it? Are you going to just put your head in the sand and say, you know, I don't care, I'm going to do my stuff and I don't give two hoots about what people think about me? Or are you going to take that role seriously with some responsibility to say, hang on, you know what? I am being viewed as a leader, maybe not a leader in the traditional sense, but a role model at the very least by people of a certain age group. I need to have certain etiquettes or behave in a certain way in front of that audience. When I'm within my own circles, private circles, that's fine. Do the effing and blinding and do whatever you do. But when it comes to behavior and reflecting on your own behavior in front of others, if I've got women around in the audience somewhere, I'm not gonna, you know, even if I was to, I don't swear generally anyway, you know that, but at times it might just, you know, but I'd be more conscious if there are women around because of being a gentleman. Right, I know I'm a bit old school like that, and you know,
it's 2021, man.
I know, but I can't help it. I'm a bit old school like that. So I'd be conscious of those things.
Okay,
if you're not, fine. But I think the question has to be at least considered in everybody's minds, whether you're aiming to become a leader within the community or not. I think it's inevitable. You will be perceived as some kind of a role model as you grow up, as we grow older, in inverted commas again, and hopefully maturer. So, you know, that's my final 2 megabytes worth on that. Becky says we can try to guide and teach the basics, such as values and morals, but other than that, how can parents guide or teach for a world that is ever-changing? What is deemed acceptable now may not in the future. 100%, Becky, this is exactly what I was saying. This comes down to parenting. There's no one perfect method of parenting. You're going to have to take into consideration the environment around you. You know, who are your kids hanging about with? What environment are they hanging about in? And, you know, who do they work with? You know, what are they watching? What are they consuming? Because consuming not only within their physical diet, but, you know, what are they consuming? What are they watching? What are they listening to? All this plays a role. All this, and the habits that they end up adopting. These are all things which we have to be very, very conscious of for ourselves first. And then, you know, then everyone else. Ali, any parting words?
No, I think interesting. I don't know. I think we slightly differ on certain aspects of leadership. Am I a little bit more sort of a traditionalist or something?
I wouldn't say traditionalist. I say I'm more of a traditionalist than you
personally,
are.
Personally, I think we need to cling firmer to our rope. Now, whatever that may be for someone, you know, if it's your parents or your faith or, you know, the sort of people that you've entrusted yourself with. For those few, there might be issues with that. But I think for most people, and even if you've left it too late, you know, if you rebelled and you broke away from your parents at 16 and you just completely did your own thing, you know, you might be at that point now where it's okay to look back and really contemplate and study what they were trying to do and what their sort of motives and intentions were and whether they did it right or wrong. I think there's still a lot to learn from that. There's a lot to learn from that. I don't think people breaking away from leadership is necessarily a good thing. I think if you break away from one leadership, you should look towards another leadership because it really does give you direction in life. I don't, maybe I don't say this often enough, but you know, stay part of a family, whether that's blood or whether that's friends, or whether that's, you know, people in faith or whatever, but do stay part of a family and stay close. It's really, truly one of the best ways to stay grounded and directed, both at the same time.
Yeah, that sense of unity and community is very Absolutely. Important in our Absolutely. Needs and in the hierarchy that we often talk about, hierarchy of needs. So, no, I agree, Ali. Beautiful words to part with. I can't disagree with that at all. I think there is certain beauty and a certain quality about having a family life and trying to nurture that, as opposed to if ever, you know, obviously there are situations when it becomes a life and death situation, or, you know, we're talking about extremes here now, then that's something different. Yeah, but generally speaking, everybody should make that effort to retain their ties of kinship and not break from them wherever, you know, ultimately, and have some patience with each other. Other than that, have some patience with your leaders. Try and educate wherever possible in the best way possible, you know, with some wisdom and hikmah rather than trying to say, oi, you're doing it the wrong way, you know. Yeah. And there is wisdom in every approach that we take. So, ladies and gents, thanks for joining us. It's been an hour already. Until the next time, hope you enjoyed it. Don't forget to like, subscribe, and all that stuff that we do on social media. I don't even know how to say it properly. That's how bad we are at this, right? But don't forget, we've got a YouTube channel, Instagram. You can find us everywhere. Make sure you like, subscribe, share, tag people in. Whoever needs to hear this, tag them in as well. And inshallah, we will catch you on the next one.